What if you knew the content of your genome, what diseases you might be predisposed to, what mutations you might silently carry? With the cost of genetic sequencing falling thanks to new techniques, it's possible to find all of that out for much less than it used to. But would you want to know? Journalist Eliza Strickland did find out for a recent piece of hers. She's an associate editor at IEEE Spectrum, the magazine of the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers. And in this month's issue of the magazine, she writes about her sequencing experience and the scientific and ethical issues it raises. Eliza, you weren't actually having your genome sequenced, but a section of it called the exome. What's the difference between those two?
The genome is your entire complement of genetic material. It's a very long molecule of about 3 billion nucleotides. These nucleotides are the letters that make up your DNA. That 3 billion letter long molecule is the genome. A subset of that is called the exome. The exome is the portion that contains all the genes within the genome. Now, the genes are the portions that carry the instructions for how your body conducts the business of life.
Ah, so you zoned right in on the part that would tell you your genetic makeup.
Yeah, the easiest way to think of it is it's sort of the functional part of the genome. We know now that the other areas that don't contain genes play some role in human health, but we just don't understand what role that is yet.
When you get sequenced, what physically happens? Are you given a blood sample?
Yes, I gave a blood sample in this case. You can also give a spit sample. You can give a hair, a piece of skin. But I gave a blood sample, and they separated out the DNA. And the way these machines work, they basically dice up that long, long DNA molecule into many, many tiny fragments, and they run those through the sequencing machines to decode the sequence of letters on each of those fragments.
You know, it's been 60-some years since Watson and Crick made their big discovery about the structure of DNA, and then it took another 50 years, I believe, for the Human Genome Project to say that it had decoded a genome. But now you can get your genome read in about an hour. So there's clearly this rapid speeding up going on. What's happening that's making this such a faster process?
When the Human Genome Project was underway in the late 90s, researchers were basically decoding fragments by hand, essentially, like taking small fragments one at a time and sequencing those fragments individually. In the late 90s, the sequencing machines really took a giant step forward. These sort of next generation sequencing machines came online, and they allowed automatic processing of many, many, many fragments of DNA in parallel, so all being run at once automatically. That helped an enormous amount. The Human Genome Project took about 13 years to complete the first human genome. And since then, further advances have come online so that, yeah, now you can get a human genome run in just a couple hours, which is just incredible.
And not just faster, but cheaper. You know, you write that an industry goal is to be able to get your genome sequenced for just $1,000. The sequencing plus the interpretation of the data by someone who knows how to read the data takes $7,000 and much longer than the few hours it takes to sequence. Will that interpretation cost eventually come down too?
Yeah, it will. That is the roadblock. The machines can spit out data incredibly quickly and incredibly cheaply, but you still need really smart doctors to go through those results and to analyze them and annotate them and to explain what all that data means. But, you know, there's a lot of smart software guys out there trying to basically automate the doctor's part of this role, too, to automate the analysis.
So even though it's gotten faster and cheaper, it's still pretty rare for average people to get their genomes sequenced. I believe that the clinic that interpreted your genetic data usually sees chronically ill people who haven't been able to get a firm diagnosis, and they hope sequencing will provide that answer. So who generally is using genome sequencing these days?
Yeah, there's a few categories of people. As you mentioned, there's people who are on these medical mystery tours, as a lot of doctors call them, people who have some serious illness. It looks to be genetic, but they're not sure what it is. So they go in and sequence their entire genomes looking for clues and answers. That's one category of patients. Also, cancer patients are getting sequenced more and more often because the doctors can actually find the specific mutations in their tumors and that can lead to tweaks in the treatment plans, you know, different drug regimens, sometimes improve outcomes. So those are the kind of patients that are getting sequenced. Also, researchers are sequencing hundreds of thousands of people with complex diseases like autism, heart disease and schizophrenia, trying to, you know, probe these complex diseases that clearly have multiple genetic and environmental factors, trying to figure out what the susceptibilities are.
But you did yours basically out of curiosity and sort of journalistic research. Did you go into this with some trepidation, worried about what you'd find?
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, I'm a pretty healthy person, pretty normal person going about my life, but you just don't know what you're going to find. So the doctors checked me for adult onset diseases, things that I might encounter later in life but that I don't have any symptoms of yet. And they checked for recessive disorders, things I might be a carrier for, that I could pass on to any children I may have or that may run in my family that my sister's children could be affected by. So there was a lot of uncertainty about what could come out of this. And I was very careful to talk it all through with my parents and my sister before starting on this project.
Right, because obviously the information you get doesn't just affect you. How did you worry it could affect your family?
Well, it's just, from part, it's just something that could cause a lot of worry. You know, if I found something like a family predisposition to Alzheimer's, you know, if I found that out in my own genome, it clearly would have come from one of my parents, and that would have been concern to them. If I found a recessive trait that my sister might share as well, that could be something that she would pass on to her children. One of the problems is that you can find out things right now in genetic medicine that can be really scary and that don't necessarily lead to any medical action that you can take.
And is that because oftentimes we don't have treatments or drugs yet for the diseases we might find that we're predisposed to?
Right. So genetic medicine is at this point where it's getting better and better at diagnosis, but it doesn't necessarily lead to any treatments.
We're speaking with Eliza Strickland, associate editor at IEEE Spectrum magazine. She had her genome sequenced. And when we return after a short break, Eliza will tell us what she learned about herself. And what about you? If you had the money to get your own genome sequenced, would you want to have it done? Would you want to know what medical problems you might be vulnerable to? Or would you be afraid to find out, especially if there's no clear treatment? Let us know your thoughts. You can go to hereandnow.org to send an email or scroll down and leave a comment. We're on Twitter, too, at hereandnow and facebook.com/hereandnowradio. Later in the show, the stock market rally, making sense of what's happening on Wall Street. And if you're not invested, what should you do? Back in a minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back. We've been talking with Eliza Strickland, an associate editor at IEEE Spectrum magazine, about having part of her genome sequenced, which she wrote about in this month's issue. Eliza, before the break, you were telling us your worries about what you might learn after you got your results. What did you find out?
I didn't find anything that was terrifying, anything that's guaranteed to strike me down. But I got a list of possible predispositions to adult onset diseases. For example, there was a mutation that has been linked to Parkinson's, another one that's been linked to kidney failure, and another one that's been linked to heart problems. So these are mutations in genes that have been linked to these diseases, but my specific mutations haven't been proven to cause these diseases. So what the doctor said was, keep these in mind as you go through life. And if you experience symptoms that seem related to the heart or the kidneys or to Parkinson's, then talk to your doctor about it and say, hey, I just so happen to have this genetic knowledge of myself. Can this inform your diagnosis or your treatment plan?
Hmm. And how did it make you feel to have that information?
I felt pretty good. I felt like an informed medical consumer. You know, I'm definitely on the sort of knowledge is power side of the debate. I'd rather know these things, especially for things like the kidney disease possibility and the heart disease possibility. These are things where I can keep them in mind, and I can live a life that may protect me or help protect me against these ailments.
Like how it guides your diet and that kind of thing.
Exactly. I can make better lifestyle choices, I hope, in order to fend off these ailments.
So even though it sounds like you are sort of quite empowered by this, you did write that basically that you'd hoped you'd been given some more guidance on what to do with what you learned. What kind of guidance do you wish you'd been given?
I think they gave me the best guidance that's possible at this point in time. What I really hoped was just that it would be a more definitive list, more exact information about what I might encounter in my medical future. But the science just isn't there yet. I mean, we're really...
That's sort of exactly what sequencing can't do, right? It can tell you you're predisposed, but you may never get this. You just can worry that you may get it.
Right, right. We don't understand enough yet about the interplay between genetics and environment and lifestyle choices. So that will all be a rich area of research for the decades to come.
Now, you actually talked with Dr. Watson, right, who had his genome sequenced, and he told you that he didn't want to know if he had Alzheimer's because he didn't want to be distracted by worrying about his possible decline. Did you get a sense that there's any consensus among doctors about whether apparently or seemingly healthy people should be sequenced?
Most of the people I spoke with seemed to think that it didn't make sense for a healthy person to go get sequenced at this point in time. Although you do have healthy people getting these direct-to-consumer tests, these very limited genetic tests from companies like 23andMe. But people are doing that sort of out of curiosity, and it's, you know, it's talked about as sort of recreational genomics. This kind of medical genomics, where you're really looking for information about your medical future, doesn't really seem ready for the doctor's office just yet.
Would you say that overall you came away believing that genome scans are practically useful yet? You know, you, for example, you did cite a case of some 14-year-old twins with this kind of movement disorder, like a palsy. Mm-hmm. And when they got sequenced, it helped them identify the genetic mutation responsible for that and a drug regimen that could help. But it seems like that's still the exception.
Well, no, I think it is useful for patients who are undergoing some kind of diagnostic odyssey. They're really just seeking knowledge about their disease. The Baylor College of Medicine, which conducted my genome scan, they have a commercial lab that helps patients like that. And they've got about a 30% success rate for diagnosis, which may not sound like a lot. You know, one-third of the patients that get their genome scanned there get some answers about what's causing their disease. But it really matters to those patients and their families. A lot of times these are pediatric patients. These are kids who have some kind of rare, mysterious illness. And for the families to understand what's gone wrong inside these kids' bodies, it helps them not just to give them peace of mind, but also to make better care plans for the future, to understand what their kids' lives are going to be like. The patients I've spoken with have said this has been enormously valuable for them.
For people who do want to do this, what other kind of ethics, privacy, discrimination issues do you recommend they keep in mind?
Yes, these are big, weighty questions that haven't really been wrestled with yet. The federal government did put an anti-discrimination law on the books some years back, saying that employers and health insurance companies couldn't discriminate based on genetic information. But we haven't really seen yet how that's going to play out. And by the way, that law didn't cover life insurance companies, which is a rather strange class of companies to exclude there.
Yeah, that's a big loophole, it seems like.
Yeah, it's huge. Basically, the privacy questions haven't been settled yet either. There are some people out there who have gotten sequenced and put their entire genomes on the internet just saying, it's free, it's open, take a look, you know, look at it, use it however you like. I was not willing to do that. I would caution people very strongly against doing that. Even if you think there's nothing to hide in your genetic data, still, you just don't know what could be revealed down the line. As our genetic knowledge gets better and better, we're going to understand more and more about what our sequences mean for our lives and our behavior. So it just seems like the wiser course to keep that data private at this point.
Your father, coincidentally, is a geneticist. So in many ways, you had kind of a personal consultant that could help you navigate this process and understand what your data meant, what your results meant. How do you think this would have been different if your dad hadn't been there?
It's an interesting question. He did caution me before I started this project. He said, you know, you really could find out something that would be hard to live with, that could really throw you for a loop. So, you know, maybe he made me think about it a little harder before just rushing into the process. But I think I would have wanted to do it anyway. I mean, regardless, I wanted to.
Curiosity would have ruled.
Yeah, I'm a pretty curious person.
Eliza Strickland is an associate editor at IEEE Spectrum, the magazine of the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, and she recently wrote about her experience with genetic sequencing. Eliza, thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Still ahead today, if you want to be the creative director of a major company, you may find yourself competing with celebrities like Will.i.am and Alicia Keys. News is next, here and now.